Okay, this hour we call it Conversations with Linda. Your questions, your stories, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moltenau with us. We'll get to your questions and stories and everything else in just a second. So, Linda, the question that I asked an hour and a half ago, and that was, what do you think of God? What is your belief system?
That there is a divine field, and I guess I think of everything like frequency as Jason does, and that the divine field would be outside of entropy, outside of time. It is the alpha to the omega, and that field is responsible for all of the matter world, and that there is some huge reason for the cycling of life, because I think that there is something true to the notion that the divine field separated itself out into the souls with the idea of going into matter to experience all things. And then the challenge, just as Professor or the physicist Tom Campbell said, if there is a goal to reduce entropy, maybe in all universes, then reducing entropy would be always the work of the soul, always trying to move toward light and away from darkness, no matter where it was. And eventually, perhaps the way it works is that you go through various frequencies of matter universes, and the more you reduce entropy, the higher you go. And eventually, maybe all of the souls in infinity, when everything else has been tried, return to the divine field. And that would be the full circle.
This complexity of life is absolutely mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is, and it's going to become more so, because I'm really sure that Jason is correct when he's talking about we're going to have a mix of cyborgs, androids, robots, and then organic human life.
Mm-hmm.
And that I would imagine, without question, that the cyborgs are just going to go, they're going to go so fast beyond anything that humans can do, because the cyborg, by definition, is something that is made to be greater, stronger, faster, thinking faster, everything than a normal human. And so we are going to be moving in this century, if we survive ourselves, into a whole new level of intelligence, George, that will not be fully organic.
It is almost too bizarre to comprehend it, Linda.
Well, science fiction has been written about it, and it's so amazing how accurate so many of the great science fiction writers have been. When Philip Dick wrote one of his books, and he had a scene that I've never forgotten, and it was somebody at one end of the universe steps through a doorway and ends up at the opposite end of the universe by simply stepping across a door jamb.
Huh.
And remember when Jason was talking about we're in a universe where there is this speed of light, E equals mc squared, 186,000 miles a second, but that we know that the space between photons is expanding faster than the speed of light. It's not understood why, but it is occurring. Well, that means then that there is the ability for contraction and expansion of space. If that's a physics and you are advanced enough, then you could begin to control the contraction of space down to a doorway in which you could artificially connect ends of the universe, exactly as he wrote.
Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Maureen in the city of New York. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hi, I just want to thank Linda and you, George, for bringing a new sense of wonder, if that's even possible, to the Jason Paget story.
Maureen, it's co-author. Maureen Seberg, the co-author.
Aha!
You both did such a beautiful job with this tonight, and I'm really appreciative of your take on it in making Jason's story even bigger. And so thank you for that.
Well, honestly, Maureen, thank you for your collaboration with him and your getting him help. And what I'm realizing, and I'm sure George had mentioned it too, this is an ongoing evolutionary story in which Jason Paget, in his mind and his interface with the universe in a way that none of the rest of us can, and his excitement about math, it is contagious. And I'm just so grateful that I got to talk with you and that we were able to do this work together, and that Jason is going to continue to go on and on touching so many lives on this planet.
I agree. And if I may say, if anyone would like to reach out to Jason after the show, the Facebook page for the book is Struck by Genius, and he's very good about getting back to people.
Sure.
And we're both so grateful. Thank you.
Maureen, what do you think?
We truly have the University of the Universe here.
What do you think of this case with Jason in terms of what happened to him?
Well, I had a completely visceral reaction to his work. The way we met each other is he had uploaded some of his geometric drawings onto YouTube, and I stumbled upon it. And I also have synesthesia, as Linda kindly mentioned earlier. So it gave me eyes to see that there was something real going on there. But Jason's synesthesia is mathematical. So it's like my synesthesia on steroids. And I truly think that his brain is less inhibited than our own brains.
Awesome.
And so he's perceiving a vaster universe.
Right.
And, you know, it was one thing to believe him because I saw his work and I met him, and Linda can attest to this, I'm sure. He's just the most sincere fellow you'd ever want to meet.
Yeah.
But it's important to say that we took him to see Rain Man's doctor, Dr. Daryl in Wisconsin, who checked him out. He had his brain scanned at a top lab in Helsinki, Finland. So it's scientifically proven that something is going on, and I think in years to come we'll have more answers.
That's great.
You know, there's a doctor, Dr. Alan Snyder of Australia, who is working with a transcranial stimulator on subjects who are not like Jason, just ordinary everyday people. And when he applies the stimulation to their brains, they end up drawing better and performing better on tests.
Wow. And do you have any specific detailed locus in the brain of where the doctors who examined Jason think was activated?
It's hard to pin down. The blow that probably did it was behind his right ear. But as we know, in brain injury, the brain then unfortunately hits the opposite side of the skull,
right?
And bounces back again. So it was profound and more global than localized.
And did you ever talk with him about whether he knew the people who attacked him, or was there some specific provocation, or was it purely just strangers?
He didn't know them, but you've brought up a very teachable moment for all of us, Linda. He was being a good Samaritan that night. One of his gal friend, who he was not dating, was on a blind date with another man, and I don't think it was going too well. And she called Jason for a ride. So he went down to the bar, and he sang John Bon Jovi's Blaze of Glory, ironically enough, and went, paid for a Coke at the bar. When he opened his wallet to pay, he had what we call the gift of fear, because the bartender, a woman, a tall brunette woman, stared just a second too long at his wallet, which looked full, but it had many small bills in it, just a couple hundred dollars. And he knew something was wrong, but he didn't take extra precautions. Now, when he stepped outside the bar, her boyfriend and another guy jumped him.
Oh, my.
Oh, jeez.
Can you imagine?
No.
So,
I hope they prosecuted them, Maureen. Did they arrest them?
Yes, but they never saw jail time.
Of course not.
In the book, we go through this a bit. Jason has completely forgiven them. And we did try to reach them for the book, but they didn't respond.
They didn't respond. Okay. Thanks, Maureen. Maureen Seberg is her name, and the book is called Struck by Genius. Small world, Linda, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Maureen, I'm just so glad to hear from you. And we all must stay in touch. That's what I said to Jason yesterday, too, that I don't feel like this is a closed story by any stretch. And hopefully we will continue to stay linked together as he has new revelations, you do, whatever. Let's just continue this story when there's something new to report.
Let's go out to Archer in Maui in Hawaii, west of the Rockies. Hello there, Archer. Go ahead.
Oh, good evening, George, and good evening, Linda.
Hi.
Well, you've gotten me all excited here this evening. I'll tell you why. Linda, the last time you and I spoke on the phone was in 2002, and I tried to convey to you what I'll try better to convey to you now, because your response was, well, if that's true, Mr. Barker, why haven't I read about it in the New York Times? Which I found quite interesting. I thought, well, obviously the time isn't ready yet, but I think the time is absolutely ready now, given what I've heard in the previous couple of hours. We do have a self-correcting proto-linguistic sound system that is fractal in construction. It has a very, very long and recorded history that has been secret until very recently. It bears no indication whatsoever of having ever evolved into its present form today. But this is the first time that we've had in just recent days, times, this to study. We anthropologists, and it seems to be a perfect illustration of exactly what Jason is referencing, and a virtual universe that's in process of creation, because it in itself would seem to be exemplar in every way.
You're talking about an archaeological discovery?
I beg your pardon?
Are you now describing an archaeological discovery?
An anthropological discovery. There is a bit of archaeology that is connected with it, but I am describing a sound system, a proto-linguistic system, a linguistic system that appears to have been given to the original humans on this planet. And as I say before, it bears no trace whatsoever of ever having evolved into its form. In other words, it was something that was transferred to the first human beings on this planet intact, completely
intact. Where is it and what is it?
I beg your pardon?
Where is it and what is it?
Well, where is it? It's a linguistic system. It's a ring. There are 23 sounds in a ring. Every sound has meaning. There's 7 sounds outside of the ring, but it's fractal in that it grows, and it follows a very certain form. Where is it? Well, it's in the brains of the people who were safeguarding this, and the last member of which is recently passed on. But it was according to a decision made in the family that had been safeguarding this for such a very long time. A decision was made 33 years ago to bring this information out 10,000 years later in what befell our recent, according to the Gregorian calendar, 24th of February in 1984.
I'm wondering, Linda, if you want Archer to send you some information. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah, send me something by email to earthfiles@earthfiles.com, because this is complex.
Extremely. It's going to take a lot of work on your part just to
understand.
Get up to speed with it. Okay, thanks, Archer. Appreciate it. We've got Ronald in Goldsboro, North Carolina. Welcome to the show. Hi, Ronald. Go ahead.
Mr. Norrie and Linda.
Hi.
When I was smoking on the edge of the YMCA, a car come out of the Y and stopped and asked me, what was I doing? And when I looked in, it was a person of me, just a little heavier, just like the picture
your,
I have
your
on
doppelganger.
My wall.
Wow.
And he said, get in. And I said, no. And he screeched out a yell that sounded like it was from hell. And I think when they split the atom in overseas, they opened a portal.
What do you think of that, Linda, these doppelgangers, these replicas of ourselves?
Well, what immediately comes to mind are cases that I have studied in the human abduction syndrome, in which non-humans have been present in the introduction of the doppelganger. And there was a case back east where a young man and was with an Eben type. He said that he was taken from where he lived and ended up walking, not understanding it. He had been at his house, and now there a stone like a terrace, and he is being guided by a non-human to walk on this terrace in a specific direction, and then sees walking toward him himself, and he and himself, the doppelganger effect, they meet. And the Eben seemed to be watching, monitoring, and measuring something. Now, this ties directly into what I've called the resurrection technology in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2. There's a huge chapter, half a dozen people who have seen these, what are called, the government calls them, rapid cycle cloning technology. And they are tubes in which the genetic material of anything can be made into whatever is the adult living form of life. And in one of those cases, the woman is told by the gray Eben that whatever they're doing, that it is very important that the entity, which he understands to be the Eben's a word for the soul, must stay with a specific container body for a specific length of time, and that they knew that her heart was going to give out because she had rheumatic fever as a teenager. And so they were explaining to her that they were going to give her a new body, and they demonstrated for her how they would transfer her soul and spirit from the body that was going to die.
What a gift that was. Linda, we're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda appears once a month on our programs, and during the holiday season, we will move her show a little bit to coincide with her schedule, but generally she's on the last Thursday of every month. So, Linda, if somebody came up to you and said, tell us what you think the Big Bang is, what would you say?
Well, you know, now my mind immediately goes to Jerry Wills
in that all-white lab with that voice telling them that they were doing the simulation of a universe because they were trying to understand how life had started in their own, and that there was this spark of light, and the lab saw it, and that was the beginning of the universe moving out of their control. And I often think of that. What if it's another dimension? And this is the part where we as humans have a hard time with the language. But I can sort of begin to grok the idea that we are nested dimensions at different frequencies, like that chord of music. And so in another dimension, if they started a universe and that spark of light was the singularity in this dimension, I somehow think things are working like that. I'm beginning to get a feel that it isn't just a universe. It could be a trillion universes, some expanding, some collapsing, some whatever. And that is what I'm going to think of now forever on that singularity, is that it could be coming from the dimension next door.
What an interesting movie this would make, wouldn't
it? I think so, too. In fact, I thought I would talk with Jerry about it. It's just becoming more and more relevant every day, what happened to him.
What do you think scientists are saying about this thought and theory?
Oh, gosh. When I was at Conscious Life Expo, I went in 3 days before to work with ancient aliens, and then I had the great fortune to be able to go to Caltech and meet with a mathematician and a philosopher and a man who does animation in Hollywood on things like science and studios. And the meeting was to talk about the simulation universe paper that Tom Campbell, with these colleagues, they're going to get it published. And for an entire day until it was, I think it was close to midnight, the discussion ranged through these minds having to do with this whole concept that if you have computer simulation evidence, and that's where these issues of why would supersymmetry have error code controllers in them? Why do the fractal aspects of the universe seem to reinforce the idea of simulation? In this latest paper, they just came out at the end of January. This is another one where there are physicists in the UK, Canada, and I think Italy, and they have been studying the residue of the microwave background in the universe. And in the process of doing all of that study, they have found information that is embedded in that microwave residue, and the information appears to line up to the idea that it is like computer encoding. So again, here comes yet another investigation that they come and they publish and show a graph and everything, saying that they, and these were the scientists' words, which are very unusual, strong evidence, that's their words, strong evidence for a holographic simulated universe. So that was January. I think there have been half a dozen serious papers just in the last year or two.
All right, let's go to the phones for our final segment here. Let's pick it up by going to first-time caller David in Willows, California. David, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, Linda, I'd like to thank you for a great show tonight.
Thank you.
First-time caller, by the way, George. Been listening for years.
Great.
I have a question, but I'd like to back it with a little bit of where I'm coming from here. Been in a few situations myself, like your guest you were talking about. Been in a few near-death experiences. Four of them have been major car accidents.
For you, four of them.
Yes.
You have had four NDEs in four different car accidents?
Yes.
Wow.
But outside of that, and the experience through those has been, it's almost like a, I don't know how to say it, like testosterone, not testosterone, but that shock. It's almost like a shock that a body experiences. And when you continue to go through it and live through it, it's like, wow, it releases something in your mind to where you're in tune. It makes you in tune. But outside of that, I do have one question at the end of this.
I'm sorry, could I ask you if you have been conscious one or two or three or four times of the separation of, we'll call it, your soul spirit from your body container? Have you had that experience?
Yes, I can recall two of them, absolutely.
And at that moment of the separation, did you hear any sound? Did you have any feeling of anything, whether it was like an electric shock or a dullness or anything, sound and or feeling?
No sound, no feeling, but pure consciousness.
Okay, tell me what that means to you.
I would say a true revelation of who I am.
Okay, in what way?
A peace. It was knowing who I am at the, and knowing where I'm going to go when I'm done here. But outside
and were
of that,
you seeing any image in your mind or in your essence?
An image, yes. I saw the light. I will say I saw the light.
Okay, and what color was the light?
White.
And in that white light, did you see anything that would even be a shape of any kind?
Circle.
A sphere. Circle. You saw a circle?
A solid sphere.
And what color was the sphere?
White.
It was white in white.
Well, in, when you say in, I don't understand what
was, you say. Was the sphere in the light, or in front of the light? Where? Or was the light itself?
Oh, okay, I know what you're saying. Yes, it was actually in the light. There was a spheric aura, but the light was inside of that. But it wasn't close. It was far away. But it was an attraction. Now, yeah. The attraction was almost apparent to where you want to go to it. You want to go, but I wanted to go. It never happened. Can't.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. If you resonated with the sphere and therefore you went to it or into it, if you didn't, why not?
I have no idea. That's up to God.
That is your mystery?
No, not mystery. That's just an experience.
A great experience.
Yes.
And in the four, is that the most dramatic, or were each different?
That was the most dramatic. That one.
Could you please send me an email to earthfiles@earthfiles.com so that we might be able to talk about this more?
I would love to, because I need help.
She'll work on it for you, David. And did you have a question?
Yeah, I did have a question. But I do want to say something. There's three words that came up tonight. I'll make it quick and simple. Fractal, math, and frequency came up tonight. Those three words intrigued my mind, but I would like to, instead of frequency, I tend to
replace it
towards harmonics.
Yeah, or resonance.
Oh, harmonic.
Or resonance, same thing, I think.
Harmonic usually implies multiple frequencies in some sort of harmony.
Thanks, David. Make sure you send her an email. Let's take a few more calls here. We have Karen.
Well, that was fascinating.
It was. In Doyle, California. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Great.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi.
I have been for the longest time fascinated by synesthesia.
Yeah.
I saw a documentary where a man, when he heard the Lord's Prayer, would taste bacon in his mouth. Another man had a girlfriend that had to break up with because, I don't remember the name, but he set a bad taste to his mouth. And a woman would go listen to a symphony orchestra, and she can feel each one of the instruments, like for instance, the guitar would tickle up down by her ankles, and another instrument would, you know, tickle on her cheeks, and she, you know, wasn't up close. But and this is going to sound like a strange question.
Right. The definition of synesthesia is that the neuronal, where you would have some sort of neurological running of nerves in the brain,
right.
That it sets off, it can be more than another, it can be two, three, or four, that would, for example, provoke, excite, whatever the verb is that's appropriate,
mm-hmm.
color, or feeling, like what you're saying, that she could feel that there's a wide, there's several of these that are so mysterious. It's not understood at all.
I have a question. I know this sounds weird. Is there any way you can train your brain?
Is there any way which?
You could train your brain.
To become synesthesia?
I don't know, because I think it is something that is spontaneous or happens, somebody's born with it. I know in myself, I have always, since I was little, that certain verbs and words I hear as being major or minor music. I've always done that. And it helped me, strangely enough. I spoke and wrote very early before I ever went to first grade. And I think it was that words had kind of a pitch music sound to me, and therefore it helped me learn to speak. And that's something along these same lines, and it's fascinating, and it's not understood.
Linda, with just a few minutes to go here, let's take some final calls. Let's go to Annie in Alabama. Annie, go ahead.
George, please don't be mad. Linda, have you heard about this? And could you please look into this? And if it's true, would you please put some nuclear physicists on the show to disclose it? Because they are whispering among themselves that they believe that they could help neutralize radiation at Fukushima with a combination of neutron bombs behind thermonuclear devices.
I'm not sure that would work, Linda. Bombs against bombs?
I don't know.
By the way, they are letting people back into that area.
Oh,
I think
God.
That's a mistake.
Listen, I have been trying to get some more information about what is really happening in that melted core where now two of the robots...
they've melted.
Yeah, and the radioactivity has to be beyond belief, and it is of great concern. It really is. And then there's the strange mystery. It may not be a mystery. It may actually have been a lab that something went wrong in Hungary, but it was a mystery a few days ago about why is it starting in the middle of January that Norway picked up a rise in iodine-131, mm-hmm. the isotope. And then within 10 to 12 days, I think it was 10 countries, were measuring higher iodine-131.
It was. They even thought that maybe the Russians detonated a nuke in the Arctic.
In the Arctic. And that came up as being a possibility and mixed. I think it's more likely, but we need harder proof. I think it's more likely it's the Hungary medical lab where they had some problems in the past. And I've been trying to find somebody who would know and could speak English. But nevertheless, between the mystery in Europe and the what appears to be the Japanese government now still trying to keep us from knowing everything that's happening in Fukushima.
Something's going on there, Linda. Thank you. We'll talk to you next month. For Dan Galanti, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.